Hot 1027 Business with Michael Avery.
Well, joining me now is Jonathan Foster Pedley. He's the Dean and Director at Henley Business School Africa. And we're going to be talking donut economics. What is that? Let's start with that. Jonathan, what can you tell us about donut economics?
Well, it's an idea invented by Kip Raworth, R-A-W-O-R-T-H. So if you want to look it up on the internet, it's a lovely idea to think to reframe economics. What we'd have to do, economics, is make sure we meet the social basics, the social foundations, gender equality, social, water, food, health, education, all those sort of things. We can't overshoot those and go and sell. It's like you imagine two rings. You can't get inside that ring. And then outside that, people are sustaining themselves. But if they go too far, you overshoot an ecological ceiling. So what you've got is this kind of two rings. It's like a donut. You can't penetrate the middle. You can't go beyond ecological ceiling. You don't want to affect, create climate change, ozone layer depletion, chemical pollution, fresh water, land conversion, biodiversity loss. All those sort of things have to be contained. So you've got to keep your economics within that sort of safe zone of not overshooting into damaging people in the social foundation, nor overshooting the other way into damaging the ecological foundation. And it's quite a good tool to think about economics in a different way. And it's a very good way to kind of visualize how you can run your organizations and countries and economies so as to keep within those limits of social engagement and social well-being and climatic and environmental well-being.
Now, I suppose, Jonathan, if we go back to, let's transport ourselves back to the 1960s or the 1970s, we're going to be starting a business. I don't know what we'll do, but maybe something in the electronics industry, because technology didn't quite exist in the degree that we've got it today. Many of these things haven't really even been thought about, right? It was really just about the profit motive.
Well, it really was, except, funnily enough, there was an undercurrent of the hippie movement and the alternatives reaction to the Vietnam War. And there was a very green movement going on. But, of course, it was very fringe, very unacceptable in a sense. And come the late years, the changes happened after then. Then the other forms of economic activity happened. But then you wouldn't really think about it. You wouldn't imagine that just by building a company and being profitable, that somehow you're going to cause damage elsewhere. Damage by being over-profiteering, by not giving people the opportunity. Damage to the environment by how you're managing your emissions or what land you're digging up and what environmental change damage you're causing. We didn't think about that so much. But some people were aware, but really the idea was, let's grow the economy. It's okay, there's plenty of space, plenty of time. We can do it. And fundamentally, governments will manage all that stuff anyway. And we've seen that governments can't manage all that stuff. And in fact, what we're facing now is the absolute stark realization that there is nobody policing sufficiently the excesses, often unintended, of businesses, often well-intended excesses. They don't realize they're causing this. And now we've got to think differently because the planet is being affected. Our children are going to have a very different world, and now we're facing a new form of accountability as a result.
It's quite interesting because if we the world, I suppose, has been on a tear for let's call it at least a decade around what we call ECG factors, you know, environmental, social, governance, you know, these type of things. How is donut economics different to the one? Is the one more legal and the other one is more kind of something that the board of directors can kind of look at?
Well, I think donut economics is an idea. It's really worth picking up the book or looking into the internet. Is a more holistic sort of perspective. The ECG ideas look at particularly environmental aspects, climatic or whatever, governance, and they look at those in as entities, and they all are interrelated. But they don't give you an overall view of how you can manage your economics on the planet and what you can do about it. There's a lot of work that has been created in donut economics or environment there, and then their website, which tells you about it. This shows you the changes, the different ways of thinking. And also the circular economy is another great idea, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle, etc., about how you manage waste and how you get rid of the concept of waste, much as it is in nature, where it's mostly recycled or reused or repaired. And we've lost that. We've lost all that, perhaps because we're so driven by stock markets and so driven by the profit margins and so driven by the idea of the corporation of something that is fundamentally about making money and profits. And it's very hard to argue against that because you can see the benefits. But what happens in that environment is that organizations have consequences beyond the boundaries of their company. And you would have seen that in the data state capture. What happened with KPMG and with Bain and with Bell Pottinger and with SAP and McKinsey in those times? I mean, great companies, all of them, who overstretched themselves unknowingly and caused damage either to society by not governing contracts and meant that poor people would be, money, public money would be wasted, used excessively, and the quality of what was created not given, or that money would be stolen. Or else there would be consequences in poor services or the environment. Who's paying for that? Those companies can create those consequences, but they're not taxed or paid on that. And government isn't sufficiently able to coherently manage that either. So what we're facing is now a new consciousness. If we want to have a better world for our kids, and if we want to have a sense of accountability, and if we love nature, if we love the environment, you can't leave it to governments. We collectively have to work and think differently in businesses as leaders about how we deal with that. And that means you've got to rethink what profit's about. There are plenty of companies whose purpose is to manage these environmental consequences, to change things around. Of course, they're going to make profit, because if they don't make profit, somebody else has got to clear up their mess, and they're just a liability. Profit's a great thing. But being driven by profit alone is not the same as being driven by purpose alone. And any good company is driven by purpose before they're driven by profit. And purpose and profit create prosperity for the community. And it's prosperity that we need now in South Africa, and we need in Africa, and we need in the world. We need more people to be lifted out. We have the Gini coefficient, which is that measure between how much money sits in the few or least hands. And the Gini coefficient in South Africa is the worst in the world. In other words, we have the most skewed income in the world. That's a really strange thing to have to face up to. And also another thing about South Africa, if you think about, do we keep within the social thresholds? South Africa doesn't do too badly compared with other countries like France or Germany or Japan in terms of social engagement, but better than places like Swaziland, India, or Lesotho. But it is doing really badly in the biophysical boundaries. In other words, we create pollution and effects, particularly what happens on our power stations and the high cells. And the industrial consequences that we have bad air in South Africa. And that means we're not delivering to people, nor are we delivering to the environment. And we have to change this around, and we can. So that's why the pressure on green energy is so important, not just for the economy, but for the people itself and the environment they live in.
So it's interesting, because we're talking about an ethical duty here, ultimately. What I'm finding quite fascinating when I look at companies that were built, before all of this became an issue, is how they're trying to transform their business models in order to take many of these factors into consideration. So you might have had a business or a project that was built purely for profit, but now it has an environmental impact. And now you need to try and transform it into something which kind of weighs up the environmental issues, the social issues, and all the other things, but yet still try and produce the profit. I find and often the rework of those kind of projects costs a lot of money. It requires capex, which obviously shareholders have to pay for ultimately. The shareholders have to be enticed. How do shareholders get enticed? I mean, what happens? Is this a governmental job? What happens there?
Well, it's very interesting. Shareholders, just people like you and me, what do we care about? If we only care about money and we put it in the abstract, then we can act in amoral ways. But actually, what's starting to happen is we are seeing the consequences around us. More and more people like you and me might be very careful about how you invest. And the consequences of polluters and people who have environmental damage are in some ways increasing. But the deck is stacked against people trying to transform to green things, because the whole structure of corporate law and the way it's built on a sort of Milton Friedman-esque structure to try and produce profit for shareholders means that there is a great tendency to look at short-term results and not to count the costs of the environmental challenges, because in that profit model, nobody really pays for it. And you can do tax arbitrage and move around the world, and you can duck and dive your moral responsibilities. So what's happening more and more through various forms of activism is that people are really sort of understanding there are two types of law, whether it's corporate law or country. You must obey moral laws, But there are immoral laws, and Nelson Mandela and the activists in times of apartheid would say that they fought against laws that were deeply immoral. And an unjust law is no law at all, that St. Augustine would have said. And so the fact is that, I mean, what Extinction Rebellion, for example, which is a movement that's trying to create activist change, whether you like it or not, have said that if you're on a ship going towards the coast and it becomes clear that the ship is on a collision course with rocks and everyone's going to die on the ship, the passengers raise the alarm and nothing happens. The passengers are bound to do what they can do to stop the ship hitting the rocks to save everybody else. And the allegory is the metaphor, you know, is like that's what the planet is now. We're on this ship going towards the rocks, and you can either obey the current laws or you can do something against them to make the change. And these activists, these climate activists, have used these sort of arguments in court to get off the arrests that they've had. So it's very interesting that we have to really think about what we do in life and the laws we follow. We feel bound to take action morally because the planet has been damaged or society has been damaged. And so what Colin Mayer, who wrote a very interesting book called Prosperity, he was the dean of Said Business School in the UK, he was saying that we really have to change the structure of corporate law in subtle ways to make purpose more important, actually, than sheer profit alone. And that sounds impossible, but it's a very interesting approach, because by changing the metrics and the laws, you might be able to change the way that corporations act. And by the way, I'd just like to say, I'm not at all against corporations. I think corporations are phenomenally powerful and created massive good in the world. But without the right laws around them, they're liable to go in the wrong direction. I think that the answer to the future is corporations governed by better people, if you like, with better ideas, who really care about what's going to happen with the planet.
John, I'll leave the listeners with something that you said right in the beginning. Profit and purpose gives you prosperity. Jonathan Foster Pedley, he's Dean and Director at Henley Business School for Africa. And I'm Kirby Lakhranji, co-founder of Rexlom Invest.
Hot 1027 Business with Michael Avery.